Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with your host, Hank Hanegraaff. The Bible Answer Man is the radio ministry of the Christian Research Institute, designed to equip believers to defend their faith and become true disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ, because life and truth matter. Our phone number is 888-7000-CRI. You can find us on the internet at equip.org. If you'd like to ask Hank a question, then call in now. Just dial 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. And now, to begin today's broadcast, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. If you've listened to me for any period of time, you know that I am a big fan of Illustra Media. And they have put together another absolute exquisite DVD. You've heard me talk about The Privileged Planet, and so many of you have The Privileged Planet, or Metamorphosis. That was one of my all-time favorites, or Flight. And I just kept thinking it can't get any better than this. But while I was convalescing, as it were, steeped in my own misery, a nose plugged with stents and blood running down the back of my throat, I watched this DVD again, and it was solace. It gave me such a sense that God has every moment in the palm of his hand, that not a hair falls from your nostril, as it were, without God having intimate acquaintance with what is going on. And so watching this was just mesmerizing for me. King of Creation is now available as my gift to you all this month. I'm always trying to find these little gems that I could put into your hand as a way of not only saying thank you for your support, but a way of saying, here's something that would be a blessing to you in return. I'm sitting down tonight with my whole family to watch it again. King of Creation, a sense through lyric, through the psalms and the hymns, through the music, through the intense graphics, a sense that God is the one who spoke and the universe leapt into existence. If you don't have a copy, make sure you send in your very best gift today and get a copy. You can do that on the web at equip.org, or when you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Resource Consultants is always standing by, 888-7000, and the letter CRI. Reading USA Today, and in the paper, there was a quote by Elton John. And that quote essentially says that if Jesus Christ were around today, he'd be accepting and supporting gay marriage. And he would also back same-sex marriage for the clergy. I thought it would be interesting for you to listen to the words of Elton John. They sound wonderful. And then let's spend just a moment analyzing what he's saying to a society and why what he says sounds like love, but in reality, is not loving at all.
But do you ever think the church, do you think it should allow its clergy, same-sex clergy, to get married?
Of course. And I don't see why Catholic priests have to be celibate. It's crazy. You know, these are old and stupid things. And the church hierarchy might be, you know, up in arms about it, the traditionalists. But times have changed. We live in a different time. If Jesus Christ was alive today, I cannot see him as the Christian person that he was and the great person that he was saying this could not happen. He was all about love and compassion and forgiveness and trying to bring people together. And that is what the church should be about.
In reality, Jesus was not only about love, however, Jesus was about truth. And that is not old and stupid, as Elton John opines, but rather it is axiomatic to the well-being of civilization. Because to compromise truth is not only dangerous, but it is to negate love. Jesus built his definition of family on the Genesis account of creation. Remember that account in which we see that man is created perfect, but man is also created incomplete. He was constructed to relate, and to reproduce with woman. And as such, family was conceived with human need in view. God had a perfect way of meeting human need. He did that, and we now want to unfurl the canvas and paint a different picture of what marriage ought to be. I love what C.S. Lewis said. The Christian ideal of marriage is based on Christ's words that a man and wife are to be regarded as a single organism. He was not expressing a sentiment. He was stating a fact. Just as one is stating a fact when you say that a lock and its key are one mechanism, or when you say that a violin and a bow are one musical instrument. The inventor of the human machine is telling us that its two halves, the male and the female, were made to be combined together in pairs, not simply on the sexual level, but totally combined. And that one organism as a permanent, an exclusive male-female mechanism is what constitutes marriage from the perspective of Jesus Christ. And if Jesus Christ were on the planet today, as he walked the planet 2,000 years ago, his definition of marriage would not change one iota. Why? Because Christ was not given to political correctness. He was given to love and truth. And he had a innate knowledge that when truth is compromised, what happens is people are compromised and civilization is compromised as well. And when the equation is compromised, it is largely devastating to a child's social and educational development. I love what a liberal Democrat, David Blankenhorn, once said. He said, marriage is a gift that society bestows on its next generation. Marriage, and only marriage, unites the three core dimensions of parenthood: biological, social, legal, into one pro-child form, the married couple. Marriage says to the child, the man and the woman whose sexual union made you will also be there to love you and to raise you. And then marriage says to society as a whole, for every child born, there's a recognized mother and father accountable to the child and to each other. The question is not whether non-traditional groupings provide benefit. Of course they do. The real question is which grouping provides maximum benefit. In other words, what is the ideal? And when discussing a culture's productivity, discussing a culture's future, nothing less than the ideal should be striven for. And that is why the matter of marriage redefinition is of no small consequence. And I bring all of this up in that we continue to stand against the redefinition of marriage. And we do that in so many different ways, not only through the answers I provide on the Bible Answer Man broadcast, but also through the Christian Research Journal. The information and quotes that I've just given to you can be found in an article by Joe Dallas. It's titled, The Family Quarrel, Defining and Defending the Biblical Concept of Family. You can find it on the web, and it is a way by which you can always be ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within you, with gentleness and with respect, but give an answer, because to not be able to answer those like Elton John, the politically correct people of the world, is to wreak havoc upon a society that we are called to transform through the renewing of our minds. A lot of you hanging on will go right to the phone calls. First up is Dennis. He's listening in Alberta, Canada, CHRB. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, Hank. I am a very long-time listener, and until I retired recently and my finances changed, a long-time supporter.
Oh, bless you.
In being a long-time listener, I have disagreed with very few of your answers, almost non-existent. However, there are two places where I do disagree with you, and I'd like to discuss, well, we probably won't have time to discuss both, but I'd like to discuss at least one of them.
Sure.
Tell me what your biblical reasons are for interpreting that the world is 4 billion years old.
Well, I don't think the Bible gives us any clue whatsoever as to how old the universe is, or how old humanity is, or how old the earth is. And so if we are to get clues in that regard, we have to look at God's general revelation. To miss God's imprimatur in general revelation is to miss much of his divine power and eternal majesty, as Paul makes clear in Romans chapter 1.
So by that, I take it you're meaning man's interpretation of the historical science then.
Well, yes. I mean, we see, for example, if you look at historical science, that the evolutionist has it all wrong. You can't form so much as a simple protein molecule in the supposed age of the universe, much less another protein molecule or a living cell. So the evolutionist has it wrong. The Bible is very clear that God creates kinds that reproduce after their own kinds. And if you look at general revelation, you see that the Cambrian explosion, as a case in point, uproots Darwin's tree of life. And in an age of scientific enlightenment, therefore, we have ample evidence to demonstrate that the evolutionary paradigm simply cannot stand. It cannot stand close scrutiny. It can only stand lockstep, marching in the same direction without critical examination, but it cannot stand close scrutiny.
I don't have words within me to express how much I agree with your statements on evolution. However, I do believe that the man has it wrong when he interprets the historical science to say that there is any evidence at all for 4 billion years of history. It just doesn't exist and hold up. There's interpretation of facts, and when you interpret it, human nature says that you're going to interpret with your predetermined paradigm, a word that you use. So if you believe that the Earth is 4 billion years old, you will take a given amount of data and interpret it that way. Those who don't believe that the Earth is 4 billion years old look at the same data and find just as clear an interpretation differently.
Well, I think you're wise in what you say. Here's where I would have a slight objection. I would say that there are things that we can look at that are not a matter of interpretation. There are many things, particular things that are related to biology and so forth, that precisely, as you say, are determined by an interpretation, and no one comes to this subject with a white lab coat on. People bring their biases to the interpretation, and I think you're wise to point that out. But here's something that doesn't require interpretation. I've mentioned this on the air, that if you look at the night sky, you can see a star in infancy, you can see a star in midlife, you can see a white dwarf star. In other words, it's burned out its nuclear energy. That's observable data. It's not subject to interpretation. And a classic case in point is one that has been riveted on the canvas of my consciousness for years. It's supernova 1987A. This was an event with an identifiable before and after. This is not subject to interpretation. This is just old observation. Prior to 1987, the supernova was a star in a distant galaxy 168,000 light years away. And then on February 23, 1987, I can remember this, I was a fairly young man at the time, the star explodes and becomes a supernova. In other words, 168,000 years ago, the star explodes, and in 1987, the light of that event finally reaches Earth. Unless, of course, God created the universe 6,000 years ago. Then the supernova would be like a documentary film of an event that never took place in the first place. It never really happened. So I think these are in the category of things that are observable. And there's nothing whatsoever. I mean, I have no dog in the hunt. If I were looking at general revelation and general revelation pointed with respect to observable things to a universe that is 5,000-6,000 years old, I wouldn't have any problem with it. But I don't think that's what it points to. And there's nothing in the Bible rightly interpreted, and we ought to be as good at reading the Bible for all it's worth as doing science well. There's nothing in the Bible that suggests that the universe is 5,000 years old. It's only those who are not adept at the art and science of biblical interpretation that come up with that. And I'm quite certain of that, having discussed this for many, many years and having written about this in my book, The Creation Answer Book. I'm so sorry, Dennis, I'm gonna have to leave it at that. I'm right up against a break.
Do you sometimes feel that in the fight for life and biblical truth, your fizz goes flat? Would you welcome an empowering touch from God that would put a gust of wind back in your sails? If so, you need King of Creation, a moving DVD that combines meditations with stunning photography accompanied by beloved hymns. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and give a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. The Bible Answer Man broadcast will return in just a moment.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also included is the entire two-hour audio gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This two-hour audio gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
Do you ever feel like throwing in the towel? Do you sometimes feel that the odds are so stacked against you that it's not even worth fighting for what you deeply believe in? Well, be comforted. You're not alone. As Vince Lombardi once noted, fatigue makes cowards of us all. The simple truth is that fighting the good fight takes its toll on all of us, and our spiritual batteries must be regularly recharged. And that's why we want to send you a wonderful DVD called King of Creation. King of Creation is a production of powerful meditation set to stunning photography that is guaranteed to put the wind back in your spiritual sails. To receive your copy of this amazing King of Creation DVD, call 888-7000-CRI and give a gift to support the life-changing work of CRI, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Apologetics is now hot stuff, but with popularity comes the danger of zeal getting ahead of knowledge and character. Christian defenders need to know the arguments of apologetics, but they must also find their moral bearings to carry the truth nobly, because both life and truth matter. Other topics include, is animal rights a biblical concern? Rethinking parenthood and the biblical foundations of the family. Sharing the gospel with those living with intellectual disability. Joyce Meyer in the 21st century. John Hagee's magic apologetics, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. In his book, God's Undertaker: Has Science Buried Truth? Eminent scientist and mathematician John Lennox notes, God is an alternative to science as an explanation. He is not to be understood merely as a God of the gaps. On the contrary, he is the ground of all explanation, scientific or otherwise. Yet, more than merely being the ground of all explanation, or even the ground of all being, for Christians, God is the King of creation. And it is that theme that is captured in an amazing collection of meditations set to film and cherished hymns that we would love for you to have. More than just something that will bless and inspire you and your loved ones, this King of Creation DVD would likely warm hearts of hardened atheists. To receive your copy of this soul-stirring production, visit equip.org and give a gift to support our work of equipping Christians to courageously defend life and truth. That's equip.org. Once again, here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. And a note, once again, last month was the end of our fiscal year. We had very direct targets that we had to make or meet, and we did not. We fell short. And so anything that could be done this month to catch up would be deeply appreciated. I have no control of that other than just mention it on the air. I felt kind of bad because I was off and did recorded programs a few days before the end of the fiscal year, as I mentioned to people that I would, because I was having surgery. And as a result of that, I wasn't able to keep this in the forefront probably as well as I have in other years, and maybe that's the reason for the deficit. But in any case, I'll let everybody know about it, and then the Holy Spirit can work through you as He provides for this ministry and allows the voice of this ministry to continue going out. I'm going to read a letter to you. It's about six or seven words. I just opened it, and it's from a person in Bellevue, New England, and his name is Kirk. And the letter simply says, "Thank you for your radio ministry. You literally saved my life." That's all. I have no idea what that means, but did it buoy my spirit? Absolutely. And is an indication that people who support this ministry are making a difference for time and for eternity? Absolutely, yes, again. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to David. He's in Connecticut listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, David.
Hi, Hank. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. I have a quick question. My wife was a practicing Catholic, and within the last few years, we recently started going to a Christian church, and she had mentioned to me yesterday about the Book of Maccabees.
Yeah.
And how it pertains to purgatory. And I just wanted to get your take on that book and also on purgatory.
Well, first of all, as an intertestamental book, and for books, we could say First and Second Maccabees, they are absolutely riveting. I have gained a tremendous amount by reading them over the years, and one of the most poignant passages that I've ever read anywhere comes from Maccabees. It's the otherworldly martyrdom of seven people who refused to be Hellenized under Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes and their cruel deaths, and how they stood for the God of Israel regardless of the cost. It is riveting. It is sobering. It is something that was just an incredible example to me when I look forward to the short duration of my life and think only one life soon will be passed, only what's done for Christ will last. So I very much appreciate Maccabees, but as many in the Christian church would, I do not hold it on the same footing as the canon itself. But I don't think that's even the main point. The main point is the passages that are appealed to in Maccabees actually do not have anything to do with purgatory whatsoever. In fact, the dead in Maccabees are explicitly referred to as idolaters, and idolatry is always a mortal sin which cannot be paid for in purgatory to begin with. So when people appeal to 2 Maccabees, I think it's chapter 12, verse 42 and following, this really doesn't make the point for purgatory. Secondly, if you look at the New Catholic Encyclopedia, and I agree with them, they acknowledge that the doctrine of purgatory is not explicitly stated in the Bible, and the Catholic Bible includes the Apocrypha. Therefore, they say that their teaching on purgatory really doesn't come from the Bible, but it is something that follows from theological deduction. It's based on the testimony of the fathers and on tradition as opposed to a biblical paradigm.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, and I think if drawn to its logical conclusion, and I think we should always be charitable when it comes to drawing logical conclusions, but when drawn to its logical conclusion, it denies the sufficiency of Christ's atonement on the cross. And again, I want to be charitable in saying that because there are many things that you hear within evangelicalism that, if drawn to their logical conclusion, would deny the sufficiency of Christ's atonement on the cross as well. So we have to be even-handed in saying that, but this is one of the reasons I don't hold to the doctrine of purgatory. It's not explicitly taught in Scripture, and I think drawn to its logical conclusion militates against the biblical paradigm.
Okay. Thank you.
You got it. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk to Richard next. He's listening in Georgia on the web. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Hank. I hope you're feeling better after your surgery.
Well, I'm hanging on by a thread, but I think I'll be able to make it through the broadcast.
Well, good. My question is about the prophecy in Daniel 9 regarding the 70 weeks and the anointed one. I've heard you say that the New Testament writers never point back to that as being a fulfillment of Christ. So my question then is, how do you see the anointed one?
Yeah. By the way, I remember with great fondness actually walking to work in Rancho Santa Margarita, California, when the Christian Research Institute was there. And it was a fairly long walk, and I'd leave early in the morning, and I was bent on memorizing Daniel. And when I got to Daniel chapter 9, I remember going over and over and over this passage and not being able to figure out its correspondence to history. And yet I knew that Daniel was troubled about something. He was given prophecy, and that prophecy was going to take place, and it anguished him. And of course, as we saw the unfolding of history, we see that Daniel was given prophecy that would portend the destruction of Babylon, unthinkable at the time, and then the rise of the Median Empire even before the destruction of Babylon to an ascendancy that was far outstripping the Babylonian prominence. It's kind of like if China didn't go to war against the United States, but built infrastructure and had economic resources and really became the superpower while we were still intact. That's sort of what was going on. And then later on, under Cyrus, you have the uniting of the Median and the Persian empires. And later on, of course, you have Alexander the Great and the Greco-Syrian Empire, culminating in Antiochus IV Epiphanes, 400 years later. So Daniel was given a kaleidoscope of history culminating with Antiochus IV Epiphany. And the murder of Ananias marks the beginning of what he terms the 2,300 evenings and mornings, just as the death of Antiochus marked their end. In my book, Has God Spoken?, I give color commentary to all of this. In 167, 3 years after the murder of Ananias, the ultimate sacrifice, of course, befell Jerusalem. The armed forces of Antiochus rise up against the temple. They abolish the daily sacrifice. They set up an abomination that causes desolation. Excuse me. And with impunity, Antiochus then plunders the temple treasury. He dedicates the sanctuary to the Olympian Zeus and sacrifices a pig on the altar. And Hellenized Jews, well, they didn't want to stand against Antiochus because it meant death, So they took on the mark of the Greco-Syrian beast, what we call the Old Testament Antichrist. They sacrificed to idols, they profaned the Sabbath, and not only so, they erected a desolating sacrilege on the altar of burnt offering. And what happened in the end is that Antiochus orchestrates Ananias' murder, and then 3 years after desecrating the temple fortress and abolishing the daily sacrifice and setting up the abomination that causes desolation, the temple is rededicated and the daily sacrifice restored. What's interesting about this, and those are sort of the cliff notes, sort of a summary very quickly, but what's interesting about all of this is Jesus points to that very thing. The abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel in order to look forward to another abomination in which the temple will not only be desecrated, but will be manifestly destroyed. And of course, that took place in 70 when the temple was destroyed, never to be built again.
Okay. I apologize, Hank. I'm not seeing where you're going with the anointed one quite. I mean, I understand the history and all that, but...
Well, okay, so you're asking who the anointed one is, and I think that the anointed one is Ananias.
Okay. That's what I was wondering, if it was him or the Maccabees or somebody in there that's, you know, in that period of time, but I wasn't exactly sure who you were pointing to.
Yeah, Ananias III was the prince of the covenant when the murderous beast Antiochus IV ascended the Syrian throne.
Okay.
He upheld the holy covenant of his God. He firmly resisted the Hellenizing ways of the Greco-Syrian despot. And he was sold out by his brother Joshua. And as a result of this, Antiochus made his own high priest, and Ananias eventually was murdered. And that started the beginning of the 2,300 evenings and mornings. One of the things I think that people do is they never really read or take the time to memorize books like Daniel and Revelation. And as a result of that, what they do is they simply paint their own paradigms onto the picture. If you read Daniel in sequence, in context, you see that there is a very clear picture that is painted for you, and it's not only painted but repainted for you so you can't miss it, which is to say that many of the things that you read about in chapter 7, you read about again in chapter 11, these kinds of things. So there's recapitulation that goes on so that you can't miss the point. And then there's interpretation given to us as well, such that if you wonder about any one of the kingdoms themselves, in some cases, they are identified specifically through the angel Gabriel. So some of this is subject to historical interpretation, but the historical interpretation is such that the skeptic looks at this and says, this is history written after the fact. It's not prophecy. Because the detail that Daniel is able to give in the 6th century about what's going to happen in the 2nd is absolutely extraordinary. And as such, Daniel becomes a book, by the way, which can be demonstrated to be prophetic, but becomes a book that is powerful in a demonstration that the Bible's divine as opposed to merely human in origin. I have to leave it at that. Coming up to a station break, written about this in the book, Has God Spoken?
Peter Atkins, a well-known British chemist and atheist, has written that, quote, science has no need of purpose. All the extraordinary, wonderful richness of the world can be expressed as growth from the dunghill of purposeless, interconnected corruption. As outlandish as his statement is, dismissing the grandeur of God's creation as purposeless corruption, sadly, he is not alone. In fact, countless intellectuals and power elites share his convictions. Is it any wonder, then, that the value of life is eroding? Why on earth bother to defend purposeless corruption growing from a dunghill? Well, for a radically different perspective, and one that will cause your heart to soar, you need to watch King of Creation, a stunning visual celebration of God's handiwork in the world around us. To receive your copy of this amazing collection of meditations set to film, visit equip.org
and give a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, equip.org. Don't tune out. Hank will be right back after the break.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. There are deep problems within Christian families in contemporary America, manifesting in troubling trends among Christian youth. These problems are rooted in misunderstandings of the meaning and proper goals of parenthood, and solutions will be found only by deriving these notions from Scripture rather than from secular culture. Other topics include John Hagee's Magic Apologetics, how the film Noah raises questions only Christianity can answer, a point-counterpoint viewpoint concerning a theology of animal rights, including an afterword by Hank Hanegraaff. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Let's face it, life today isn't for the faint of heart, especially if you're swimming against a spiritual and cultural current that is headed toward the falls and gaining force. In fact, if you're fighting the good fight and seeking to be salt and light in your sphere of influence, you're going to get tired. We need to occasionally be still and let our hearts, minds, and strength be renewed with images of God's goodness and power. That's why we want to send you a wonderful DVD called King of Creation. King of Creation is a collection of powerful meditations set to stunning photography that is guaranteed to put the wind back in your spiritual sails. To receive your copy of King of Creation on DVD, call 888-7000-CRI and give a gift to support the life-changing work of CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org, equip.org.
Are you a Christian looking for a phenomenal Bible app? The Word of Promise Bible app may be exactly what you've been looking for. You'll experience the Bible like never before. This free app includes the entire New King James Bible text with powerful search capabilities. For example, you can look for a word like love, and every verse that includes love will appear. Also, included is the entire two-hour audio gospel of John featuring world-renowned actors. This two-hour audio gospel of John is fully dramatized with sound effects, with an original music score, and is synchronized to the text so that as you hear this powerful audio theater, the text appears verse by verse. Receive your free Word of Promise Bible app today at equip.org.
If you feel that continuously standing for truth occasionally takes its toll on your spiritual batteries, welcome aboard. You're not alone. For a wonderful battery charger for you and your loved ones, you need to watch King of Creation, a stunning visual celebration of God's handiwork in the world around us. To receive your copy as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Let's get back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Here's Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much. Talking about the King of Creation, as I was watching it again today, I was mesmerized not only by the graphics, but the words that underlay the graphics and were being communicated so poignantly and powerfully, partially from Psalm 39. I said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I will put a muzzle on my mouth as long as the wicked are in my presence. But when I was silent and still, not even saying anything good, my anguish increased. My heart grew hot within me. And as I meditated, the fire burned. And I spoke with my tongue, show me, O Lord, my life's end, and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting is my life. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. And even as I'm reading those words, I'm thinking back to the years I said on the Bible Answer Man broadcast that my predecessor died when he was 60. I used to say, if I lived to be as old as he was when he died, I only have 10 years of ministry, or it might have been 8 years of ministry, or 5 years of ministry left, or maybe it was even 15 years of ministry, whatever time I said it. But I was comparing my life and thinking, wow, he died at 60. That means when I was 50 saying this, I only had 10 years left to live if I would live the same age span. Well, now I've outlived that age span. Now I think, if I live to be as old as my dad was when he died, 74, I only have 10 years. And what is that? That is precisely what the psalmist is saying. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. Man is a mere phantom as he goes to and fro. He bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it. But now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. Save me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of fools. Anyway, this text was so poignant, and I was thinking, you know what? I've always said I love Psalm 139 as much as any psalm I've ever read or memorized. And I thought, you know what, this is a psalm I've not memorized before, but I should memorize right away because it is absolutely profound. King of Creation, anyway, sparked my imagination, as it will yours. When you get it, watch it, hear these biblical words, but they are superimposed upon graphics that are beyond description. You have to see it to believe it. Available for your gift. You can get your copy on the web at equip.org. Or when you write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, resource consultant standing by, 888-7000, and the letters CRI. Back to the phone lines, and we will talk next to Joe. He's listening in Freeport, Louisiana. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Hank, how you doing? I hope you get better with your surgery.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be real quick, Hank, because I know you have a lot of people to talk to. But Hebrews 9 and 22, and I was going to ask the question, is it okay to use the New Living Translation? But Hebrews 9 and 22, John MacArthur Study Bible, he said the shedding of blood refers to death.
Well, I think it does in that context, right? Because the law requires that everything, nearly everything, be cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood, says the writer of Hebrews, there is no forgiveness, or no forgiveness of sins. So it is the shed blood of Jesus Christ, his sacrifice on the cross, meaning his death and all that he suffered in dying for the sins of humanity, that there is sacrifice for sin and forgiveness.
Okay, because I had a friend of mine, he said he didn't believe in John MacArthur. He said a lot of people were complaining about him, and he didn't like that. When he said John MacArthur was saying shedding of blood was symbolic to death, he didn't believe it was symbolic to death.
Yeah, it certainly is.
That's what I thought. Do you like John MacArthur too?
Well, I like him as a person. I don't agree with everything that he says. Certainly when it comes to essential Christian doctrine, we stand shoulder to shoulder. On secondary issues, we have some differences of opinion.
Uh-oh. Man, and I was loving him, too.
Well, that's good. You should. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't.
Okay, because so far I've been really blessed on a lot of his commentary. I guess I haven't ran across some of the ones where, because I trust you a lot, too, and that's why I asked you, so, because I believe you are really a prophet from God.
Well,
what about the New Living Translation, Hank?
Well, I've never been comfortable calling it a translation. I think it is better rendered a paraphrase. And I think when you are using the Bible in a devotional manner as opposed to studying the Bible, the New Living Translation can be very helpful. But you have to realize that it sometimes goes beyond a range of meaning that is allowable for translating a thought from one language into the receptor language, in this case, the English language.
Oh, okay. Which would be a good one I can use besides King James? I just don't like studying in old English.
Yeah, well, New International Version is very, very good. That's one of my favorites. The New King James Version is excellent. I did a study Bible in the New King James. So there are a lot of wonderful translations out there. The NASB I love for memorizing Proverbs because Proverbs are pithy, and it's more in the realm of word-for-word translation, although neither dynamic nor formal equivalencies live up to their reputation a lot of times.
Okay, so what part of MacArthur you don't like, so I can beware of it again?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't like him, number one. I like him very much as a person. I disagree with some of the stances that he has taken with respect to Pentecostalism, which I think is acceptable within the pale of orthodoxy. Many times he will take a Pentecostal person and attribute word of faith teachings to that person or to the movement as a whole. And I think that's painting with a little broader brush than I'm comfortable with. I am very outspoken when it comes to word of faith teaching. I've written a book titled Christianity in Crisis, 21st Century. But certainly it is unfair to paint all Pentecostals as word of faith preachers or make that association because there are very fine Pentecostal preachers and theologians and those that do great hermeneutics. And so I simply don't agree with him on that point. I also don't agree with him on eschatology, which has to do with hermeneutical principles. But these are secondary issues. On the main issue with respect to eschatology, I agree. Jesus is coming again, and so we would stand shoulder to shoulder on the essential, and we would debate vigorously the non-essential. And that's what we ought to do, and we ought to do it in a collegial fashion rather than being divisive.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've been using the New Living Translation. I like it a whole lot, but I may change the New International Version.
Well, you know, keep reading the one. I mean, it's a wonderful paraphrase. Just recognize it for what it is.
Oh, okay. Just recognize it for what it is. And another thing, why do they take some verses out? Is that bad?
Well, like if you ever took a verse out, it would be bad, yes. But here's the point. The question has to be asked, is the verse in to begin with? Which is to say, a lot of people will say a verse is taken out when the oldest and best and most reliable manuscripts don't include the verse to begin with. So you should never take anything out of the Bible, but you shouldn't add anything into the Bible as well. For example, in John 5, you have the Comma Johannine, as it is popularly known. This involves a series of words which are thoroughly biblical, but they are not found in the oldest, best, and most reliable manuscripts. So to say that is taken out is not the issue. It was never there to begin with. It was a scribal addition. It is thoroughly biblical, and it coheres with the rest of Scripture, but it wasn't part of the autographs or the original writings. And we have a great benefit in our time, Joe, and that is we have manuscripts that are voluminous. There are so many of them. And you can compare manuscript with manuscript through the science of textual criticism and get back through that to the autographa. So God has preserved his word over time. And he has done that in the wealth of manuscript that are available to us today. I've written about this in a lot of detail in my book, Has God Spoken?
So which one of your books do you expect kind of questions that I'm asking, which one of your books could I purchase that would give me those type of answers, you know, where I can just read it myself?
Yeah, Has God Spoken would really be helpful with respect to the litany of questions you asked today.
Okay, thanks, Hank.
Hey, you got it, my friend. Thank you, Joe. Jimmy next, El Paso, Texas, KELP. Hi, Jimmy.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, I was wondering if, since I know that you considered Revelation to have been fulfilled in the past, if Revelation 3:20 is a relevant salvation verse for today.
Well, you know, when you say I consider Revelation to be fulfilled in the past, I mean, it depends on what you're talking about. Revelation includes the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven, prepared as a bride beautifully adorned for her husband, and allows voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men and he will live with them. That's not something that has happened in the past. That's something we yet long for in the future. But as far as Revelation 3:20 is concerned, I mean, this whole passage has to do with a passage directed towards the Laodiceans. And the Laodiceans were neither hot nor cold. They were lukewarm. They were wretched, poor, blind, and naked. And so Jesus says, I counsel you to repent, because he is standing at the very door and he's knocking. And if they hear his voice and open the door, he will come in and eat with them and they with him, which is to say, he will come in and have intimate personal relationship with them. So as such, I think it absolutely can be used as a text to talk about how you can have intimacy with Jesus Christ, which only comes through salvation, when the barrier between those who are steeped in sin and the one who is holy is removed by Jesus Christ, who only can live the life that we could never live and offers us his perfection as an absolutely free gift that cannot be earned or deserved, but can simply reach out the hand of a beggar to receive the gift of a king. Up against the clock, we're out of time for today's show. A lot of you hanging on. Hopefully you'll call back tomorrow. Look forward to being right back here in another 24 hours answering your questions. Once again, it's a privilege. Thanks for standing with us. Thanks for praying for us. Together, we're making a difference.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To learn more about Hank or the Christian Research Institute, just go to equip.org. Equip.org is a fountain of information and resources designed to help you defend the faith and grow in your knowledge of the truth. You can also stream the broadcast live or download archived broadcast. To talk with a resource consultant by phone, call 888-7000-CRI. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Do you ever feel like throwing in the towel? Do you sometimes feel that the odds are so stacked against you that it's not even worth fighting for what you deeply believe in? Well, be comforted. You're not alone. As Vince Lombardi once noted, fatigue makes cowards of us all. The simple truth is that fighting the good fight takes its toll on all of us, and our spiritual batteries must be regularly recharged. And that's why we want to send you a wonderful DVD called King of Creation. King of Creation is a production of powerful meditation set to stunning photography that is guaranteed to put the wind back in your spiritual sails. To receive your copy of this amazing King of Creation DVD, call 888-7000-CRI and give a gift to support the life-changing work of CRI, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal.
Apologetics is now hot stuff, but with popularity comes the danger of zeal getting ahead of knowledge and character. Christian defenders need to know the arguments of apologetics, but they must also find their moral bearings to carry the truth nobly, because both life and truth matter. Other topics include, is animal rights a biblical concern? Rethinking parenthood and the biblical foundations of the family. Sharing the gospel with those living with intellectual disability. Joyce Meyer in the 21st century. John Hagee's magic apologetics and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org.